An addition this year to the wonderful players at the Metal Music Festival is Michelle Ross, a violinist. Welcome to the Northwest, Michelle.
Thank you. I'd love it here.
Where do you live usually?
I live in New York City.
So is it your first time to come to the Northwest?
I was in Oregon last year for a few days, but first time in Seattle and then first time in the Valley here.
Well, welcome. You're known as a violinist, you're here as a violinist, and you have a great tradition as a violinist, having studied with Dorothy DeLay and Itzhak Perlman, people like that. But I want to move toward the other aspects of you, beyond being a violinist. You do a lot of concertmaster work. You've recently done some conducting. You've put together some things. Talk about how you extend your life beyond playing the violin.
Well, I've always had a lot of different interests, and I sort of see being a musician or, you know, being on this path of figuring out what it means to be an artist has never been only violin playing. And I love when things kind of can connect the dots across genres and things like that. So, yeah, from a young age, I started composing in high school probably, and I loved literature, and I ended up having the opportunity to study at a, you know, academic school while staying at Juilliard. And, you know, I've started curating some concert series and things like that in the last few years, which I've just, a lot of these things for me have developed quite naturally. Sometimes you see an opportunity or you have this magical collaboration with people, and I'm a big dreamer, so I always ask if things are possible. And yeah, I love being surprised. I think that's like what keeps what we do so interesting. So I love being able to do all different kinds of collaborations.
So in addition to your desire to do things and maybe your gutsiness to try them, what qualities do you have that that make being a concertmaster an effective thing for you to do?
When I've been able to be guest concertmaster places, so much fun, and I find it super like stimulating. Just the question of what it means to be in a sort of a leader position, and what that means for a large group of people, and just I'm very fascinated by like the concept of an orchestra and how perspective of timing and phrasing and sound and all those things can change no matter where you're sitting. And then when the magic happens and everybody's kind of wills align, and then in the concert it's just kind of the music takes over and everyone comes together. It's basically like chamber music on steroids in the experiences that I've had. I started doing that a few years ago after I auditioned for a specific orchestra, and then one thing led to another, and I never actually imagine doing that when I was in school or anything, but I really love it. So, yeah.
So people ask you to do it and you get to do it.
Yeah, have fun.
Then the next bigger step of conducting. You've started doing that, haven't you?
I did that a few years ago with this chamber orchestra in Paris. I was able to play Mendelssohn Concerto without a conductor. So that was a really amazing experience.
Talk about that. What did you suddenly have to do, or was it pretty natural? Was it kind of just like being the concertmaster?
It's funny because when I was in high school, I wanted to be a conductor, and I studied conducting very as seriously as you can when you're in pre-college, and I always had this vision of being a conductor. And then I got a little older, and I got, I think, more self-conscious, which is what happens, you know, when you get a little older. So that I had to really be aware of. I mean, as a performer, as an instrumentalist, you know, right now I have hopefully a good gauge of what I need to do using my body as a tool to play the instrument. All of a sudden, when you are conducting, it just was a whole fast learning curve in this one experience. I was actually there as part of this program called Play Direct. So Joey Swenson, a brilliant violinist and conductor, was leading that
who has had connections with around here.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he has an aunt that lives in Spokane.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Well, gosh. So Joey is like a force of nature, and it has been a huge influence for me. So he was sort of leading that week and coaching us, and I mean, watching him is unlike anything else. So I think that I haven't revisited conducting. I haven't had the time. When I prepare, for instance, when I'm leading in an orchestra, I always try and study and prepare the way I would as a conductor. And I, every time I work with different conductors, I try and be very aware of, and it's this, you know, sort of mysterious thing. Sometimes people can communicate and allow people to understand their vision and bring it to life without saying anything or even moving very much. It's an energy. I don't know. I think what I took from it was that your intentions have to be so clear and so ingrained that no matter what you do to try and communicate them, people will get it. And I think that that's what you need to be a good musician in any context, playing alone or playing in chamber music, is that you have to know exactly what you're saying, even if it's not premeditated, even if it's on the moment, but it has to be so strong that anybody can sense it. And I think whatever medium you bring that to life in, that's what has to be there. And as when you're conducting and everybody's there at, you know, just looking up at you, you have to know, otherwise, you know, good luck. But
so. Speaking with Michelle Ross, violinist, and as we're discussing, concertmaster and conductor. And then you earlier alluded to composing from an early age. Was it kind of just an improvisation you would do, or would you sit down with music paper and write tunes, or what would you do as a kid?
Well, when I first started, you know, I was very lucky. Things just came out. It was just like very, very natural. I played piano for maybe 2 years when I was a kid, when I was five. I started both at the same time. But I didn't have really any facility on the piano. So I guess at that age I was maybe checking some notes, but mostly I would hear melodies in my head and write them down. And I was young enough to not know any better, to get neurotic and to judge it. So when I first discovered that I loved to compose, I was maybe 14 or 15, and these pieces were just effortlessly coming out. Then it got a lot harder for me, and I stopped writing completely for a while. And then I was just starting my senior year in college, and it was the summer beforehand. I had been at Knysall Hall all summer, and it was like raining for 7 weeks, and I would just find myself in these practice rooms in the woods with these pianos sitting there, and that's when I started improvising without any motive whatsoever. It was summertime. I had nothing else. I don't know. Something was happening with me and drew me to the piano. And I started recording these improvisations. And a few months afterwards, I listened to them and I couldn't believe what had happened. Cause you know, I really thought that I composed when I was a teenager, and then I lost it. That's what I believed. And all of a sudden these melodies were all of these things would come out through my hands on the piano, an instrument that I didn't think I knew how to play. And it was like all of these ideas were still there brewing and mingling with one another. And I would just sit and play for sometimes 20 minutes, sometimes 2 hours. And so that was sort of, improvisation was my way back to composing in this really beautiful way. And a lot of other things were happening at the same time. Like I was an English major, so I took this course of 20th century, and I discovered like surrealist writers and the Surrealist Manifesto, and talking about the imagination and the subconscious and, you know, inverting reality and things like that. And then I read this novel called Nadia by André Breton, and there was just all of these things sort of pointing at the fact that improvising is kind of my key here. When my mother was going to name me Nadia, and in the book she's like half muse, half you don't know if she's real or you don't know if she's imaginary. I'm kind of rambling, but it was a very powerful kind of moment in my life where, again, things from different spheres or genres were kind of coming together and helping me see what it is I feel compelled to do through music. So then I started improvising on the violin by sometimes, you know, changing one of my strings differently, because the whole reason why the piano was this sort of unintimidating place for me to go back to composing without judgment was that I didn't play it, or at least that's how I thought to myself. So the violin, I had to like even the playing field for myself with it. So that's why when I first started improvising on the violin, I would tune it differently. And then I started trying to mix, and this was pre-iPhone, and I was never good at computers. But at that stage, I had this idea of trying to play the violin and piano at the same time and sort of embracing being in that struggle between the two and finding that really beautiful. And again, going back to the literary connections with asking yourself, where is all this coming from? And I've recently been trying to go back to pen and paper, traditional writing, and getting my skills up. And I'm working on a string quartet at the moment. And I've been doing a lot of collaborative works with other mediums and stuff and using electronics and things. And so I'm like simultaneously growing myself as an improviser on violin and piano. I've slowly started playing piano in public. I did it once recently. So I'm trying to, for myself, figure out what the differences are and where the crossovers are between improvising and composing. So,
yeah. And you referred to the book Nadia, and that's the title of the piece that's being played, that you're playing at the Metal Music Festival on Tuesday night for, and it's listed, I think, for violin and electronics or something like that. What are the electronics involved?
Exactly. So this is what I was describing before was basically the origin of this piece. Mm-hmm. It was 2011, I believe. And basically there is a solo violin part that is, it's a little different every time. And the electronic track is a mixture of my own live piano playing and some affected things that I did with on the computer. So it's sort of a mixture. And again, it represents for me this idea of trying to capture the muse and not actually being able to. So for me, every time I play the piece and in every space, it's in a different place. And in an ideal world, I would literally be playing both instruments at once. But since I can't, this is my way of trying to dance with my own imagination and like embracing the kind of paradox of that. So,
and last night after the festival concert, you and a few people were standing on the lawn and you were almost breaking into dancing. So I gather that's another side of you that's hiding in there.
Maybe. Yeah.
Michelle Ross, the violinist, one of the violinists at the Metau Valley Music Festival and the composer of Nadia, which is on Tuesday night's concert. Thank you, Michelle.
Thank you so much.